Trainer Talks and Tales acknowledges the traditional owners and custodians of the land in which we're recording this podcast, the Turrbal and Yugara people of Meanjin. We pay our respects to elders past and present and extend our respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples today.
Trainer Talks and Tales love having an array of guests with a variety of opinions. However, the views of the individuals do not necessarily reflect the perspectives of the host facilities. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Trainer Talks and Tales. You are, of course, joined by your two co-hosts today, Daisy and Tess. Hi, Tess.
Hey, Daisy. How you going?
I'm good, thank you. How's your week been?
Yeah, really good. I had a really good week this week, lots of training wins. Didn't have much to touch up on this week other than still just talking about my training advisory group that we've got at work. I was planning next week's meeting today, so it was nice just to have a little reminder to all the keepers, like if you have some training plans that you wanted to write or if you wanted to make a target stick, that's going to be the meeting next week, so make sure you do that. So anyway, any talking about training just gets me excited. So that's all that's really new with me. But how about you? How's your week been?
Yeah, good. I was just going to say, actually, it might be cool with one of your training meetings. I remember once we did one at Sea Life and we did the clicker game in between, like during that sort of meeting. And that was really fun. Like it was really good team bonding and it was a good way to kind of understand the bridge and the behavior. So and it would be cool if you end up doing it, definitely report back because it's kind of a fun thing to bring everyone together.
Absolutely. Yeah, we did it maybe a couple of months ago when we first introduced the team. And it's just an excuse to smash a bag of Mentos between you. So why not? Why not?
Literally, we were reinforced by M&M's. So I was pretty stoked that when we did. But yeah, my week has been good. Nothing overly exciting to touch on this week as well. Getting ready for school holidays, starting tomorrow, if you're listening to this, I guess, ready for Easter. But I did want to quickly touch on somewhere that I visited a couple of weeks ago that I did completely forget to chat about and sort of ran out of time. But yeah, a couple of weeks ago, I went down to one of my best friend's place that she works. So this is for people who live in Brisbane. I would definitely recommend checking out Walkabout Creek Discovery Centre. It is a really beautiful facility. Doesn't have a ton of species, all natives, but really beautifully done. The habitats are really cool, really well designed for the different species. They've got a little tree kangaroo that we got to get really close to and take some photos with. And I'm pretty sure that they're looking at introducing encounters with their tree kangaroo pretty soon, which is awesome. So it's pretty rare that you get to hang out with a species like that. So that was pretty cool. And then we also got to meet a striped possum, which I'm sure you've seen the really cute reel that we posted with that little possum, that they use her a lot for education, meet and greets too, but she's one of three that is currently in human care. So she was a rescued animal from up north that moved down permanently to their facility as she wasn't able to be released, unfortunately. But yeah, it was really fun. It's easily done in like maybe 2 hours. So if you have the chance to head down there, I definitely recommend.
Yeah, I love that place. I think it's like 15 minutes from Lone Pine, honestly. It's so close. And that blows my mind that she's one of three in human care and she's so cute. So I got to go back there soon and meet her.
Yes, it definitely pays in our favor to have friends in good places because you get to get close to the animals.
Absolutely.
Yeah, this week we thought we might do something a little bit different. So we really enjoyed at the start of the year doing a bit of a catch-up episode with Tess and I, just kind of chatting about what we've been up to, what our goals are. And we'd love to every sort of few months maybe just do an episode with just us two where we can either do a Q&A or we can chat about some things that are on our mind, some goals, things that are happening. So today we are doing a bit of a Q&A. So thank you all so much for sending through all of your questions. We have a huge variety of questions, some slightly more serious than others, but I do think it will be fun. So Tess, did you want to maybe kickstart with question number one that we got?
Yeah, sounds good. So number one was, what are your favorite resources to learn from?
Oh, I love this question. It is a good one. And I do feel like over the time that we've been recording with a variety of different people, a lot of them have shared some of their resources as well. So definitely head back, especially Bianca's episode that just came out. She shared some of her favorite training books, which I definitely would recommend too. For me, I have about an hour commute to work every day there and back. So I get the opportunity to listen to a ton of podcasts. So obviously I'm going to plug this podcast because it's brilliant and we have so much fun and we really hope that you guys get a lot out of it too. But I really enjoy listening to the ABMA podcast, Zoologic, Rossafari as well. They're really great educational ones, and the ABMA is specifically targeted towards training and behavior. So I definitely would recommend that one too. I do think as well, you can learn a lot from following people that are like-minded to you in the industry. So we come across really cool training wins on socials every single day, different Facebook communities, different Instagram groups as well. So I definitely would recommend that. And then I probably, like, honestly, my favorite way to learn is just like through watching people. I get the opportunity to do that. I'm very lucky in what I do. So a resource to me is just having a really good community around you. If you're in the position where that's possible, if you're not comfortable with things, asking those questions again and again. I'm definitely a visual learner, so I definitely like to see things a few times, and that really helps me learn. And I know a lot of people are slightly different with that. But how about you, Tess? Do you have anything sort of different to those?
No, but I would just like to say, because you mentioned it, we had a lot of interest or a lot of feedback on a training video we posted the other day of Paradise Country with the training of their devil, and we would love to post a little bit more about that. You know, we have so many cool different animals and all these different facilities around the world. Like, Trainer Talks and Tales is actually, we can see where we're reaching, and we can see the Netherlands, we can see Germany and all that kind of stuff. So there's so many different listeners doing some awesome stuff, and we want to see it. So if you do have some cool training videos that you'd like to send us, we would love to share that, because like Daisy said, there's nothing cooler than seeing it firsthand. So if you do have those videos, please send them through to us. That was my little segue in there.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, we want to make sure that you get the credit that you deserve and post it out to more and more people so that everyone gets to see all the amazing stuff that everyone's doing with different species. Okay, so question number two, Tess, for the species that you work with, so I guess we're looking at birds of prey for you, what is your favorite enrichment item that you utilize?
Well, I have a lot of bird eating birds within our raptor collection at Lone Pine, but I found lately that we will try to feed out like pigeons and lorikeets and that kind of thing to a variety of different species. But lately I've been saving the wings, and it's been really nice because even if the bird, you know, is not supposed to get that much food on that day, if you actually weigh the amount of meat on that pigeon wing, it's like 12 grams or something, but the amount of time they spend plucking that wing and just really enjoying it is incredible. So the peregrine will spend like 45 minutes plucking every individual feather, the barking owls, that kind of stuff, even the eagles. So I have been trying to utilize those natural kind of enrichment items rather than like shredded paper, even though they love that too. But just there's nothing more natural than a pigeon getting eaten by a peregrine. So I've just been trying to do that kind of enrichment at the moment. And yeah, I've really been seeing the benefit of it because they spend so long plucking it. So that's mine. But what about you?
That's a really cool one. I love that. I'd love to see a video of that one day. That would be really cool to see. So probably with the penguins, they absolutely love anything that's sort of flashing lights, mirrors, reflections off the sunlight. So one of my favorites is we have the set of Christmas tree lights, and at our facility we have sort of underwater viewing as well. So we go to our underwater viewing windows and we turn on all the Christmas lights. Our chicks especially, I say chicks, sorry, but they're just our juvenile penguins, are especially interested in spending time with these flashing lights. And it's really cool because we see them holding their breath. We generally have behavioral goals that we have to hit every day with our enrichment. So if it is a, you know, breath holding or interaction with an object, sorry, it's definitely always really, really positive. So it's probably one of my favorite ones, and it's great to see the chicks kind of swimming around and chasing it, and guests can watch really well. So that's probably my favorite one with the penguins.
I love that you guys have goals to reach for that. That's awesome. Rather than just putting it in, seeing how it goes, it's like, no, let's aim to have this A, B, and C happen. So that's awesome. I didn't know you guys did that. That's cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. Actually, I'd love to chat about it a little bit more, maybe on another episode.
Sounds good. All right. Number three was how to deal with imposter syndrome. Have you ever suffered from this, Daisy?
100%. And probably not until I moved into the marine world and starting this podcast. I don't know about you, but I absolutely felt overwhelmed with feeling that I wasn't justified enough to do something like this. I didn't have enough experience to do something like this. And it's really difficult. Like, it took me a good couple of months to kind of move past. Did you find that at all with starting this podcast, Tess?
Oh, bro, still every day. Like, the language that you guys use in the marine world, I'm still like, yes, Daisy, I gotcha. Like, how am I running this podcast when I can't even articulate what I'm trying to say? So 100% feel it. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I think coming from not particularly being overly involved in training at my prior facility and moving into training, it was incredibly amazing and I got to learn so much. My skill set has definitely advanced a lot and I'm really grateful for that experience. I think then taking that knowledge that I learned onto other things and maybe people that I used to work with was difficult because I don't think they'd seen that side of me where I had that skill set, if that makes sense. So I definitely felt like, oh, I'm not sure if I'm not qualified. I don't think qualified is the right word, but I questioned if I had the actual ability to be backing what I was saying.
Absolutely. And I just remember even like a couple of years ago when you started at Sea Life and you were talking about SDs, I hadn't even heard that term because obviously my facility, we call them Qs. So there's that self-doubt. I was like, oh gosh, I'm not cut out for the training world. I don't know it, but it's all about just doing the best you can and trying to further your knowledge in any way you can. So you can get past imposter syndrome, just have a bit of confidence in yourself and your abilities, and we're all always learning.
Yeah, and people who you think don't have it probably have it. So don't think that you're the only person as well. So yeah, I think with that, just remain humble, remain confident, like you mentioned. Anything that you don't understand, learn about, invest in yourself and invest in your development, and that's definitely going to help with overcoming that imposter syndrome.
Absolutely.
Okay, question number 4, Tess, we had come up a couple of times and it is a really good question, so I'm excited to kind of hear your take on this one. What is some advice that you can share on dealing with tough management or drama in the industry?
Well, someone said this to me the other day. They're like, oh, you don't leave your job, you leave your manager. And I was like, oh, woof, that's kind of true sometimes.
That's heavy.
But I mean, I'm not saying that I'm finding that, but I have had that in other jobs, or I've definitely seen managers struggle with their staff. So my only advice would be to try and work on your communication with that manager. So we all have different communication styles. You can do quizzes online to try and figure out what your communication style is. You can even ask that manager that you're struggling with and see if they could do the quiz, or if they have a certain way of communicating with people, if they prefer direct or if they prefer to have a little chat first. And you can kind of usually tell how people prefer to be spoken to or how to address information. So if you can figure out what their communication style is, I think that's really important if you are struggling with a particular manager. For me with drama, I hate drama. I cannot stand it. And I have not been involved in it for years. It's easier for me in my role at my sanctuary because I'm kind of a bit in my own world with my own team. Like, we're not directly in with all the other keepers every day, so that makes it a little bit easier to have that little bit of degree of separation. But I also just think that drama comes to those who seek it. And you know, gossip or that kind of stuff, if you're spreading it or if you're invested in it, it's going to bite you on the bum or it's gonna involve you in some way. So to me, if you don't want to be part of drama, just don't be involved. If someone wants to tell you some gossip and that kind of thing, be like, oh, really? And show no interest. And therefore, next time that person won't tell you or you won't be involved because you couldn't care less. So if you can, just step back away from it and just show no interest or involvement in any of those kind of dramas. That's my best advice.
Yeah, no, I think it's great advice. And I think you're right. Anyone who gets involved in it is, you know, there's nothing you gain from it. So there's no point wasting energy on things like that. And I'll be the first to admit that I've definitely have worked at facilities that came with a very toxic culture. And there was a couple of times that I had to really sit down and reflect on who I was becoming. And it was someone that I was really not a fan of. And that was quite difficult, but it was a huge step for me because it made me really realize that that's not who I am. Participating in any sort of drama is definitely not what I want to be involved in at all. I gain nothing from it. I probably lose confidence with it because you're constantly questioning what people are saying about you. So I think just staying really true to yourself, true to your morals, like we mentioned earlier, staying humble about it as well. And I completely agree with the management style. I've had managers who have asked me, how do you best receive feedback? And that was great. I thought that was brilliant that they asked that question. And like you mentioned, Tess, there's no reason that you can't ask that question back to them. And the other thing I thought of as well was, if you are struggling with communicating with your manager, but you have someone else in your team that is someone that you really feel quite close to, you can connect to, your very similar personalities, you can always seek their advice for how to, you know, best communicate with that person that you're struggling with, and use them as long as it's not in a nasty way that you're communicating to them, but just utilizing them as a bit of a confidence boost, I guess, or to give you some feedback and a push in the right direction of how to go forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's always other avenues like HR as well, if it gets a bit extreme. So you can always explore that as well.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that was a bit heavy. Number five is a little bit lighter. What is your dream species to work with, Daisy?
Oh, at the moment, dolphins. I would love to work with dolphins one day. Yeah. I've always loved to work with elephants too, but right now, dolphins for sure. What about you?
I'd really love to work with a buzzard. It's been on our like goals list for a long time, but they are quite hard to acquire, but I would love to work with a buzzard or just more kite species. I've only worked with brownies and black kites, but to have a square tail or to have a whistling kite would be awesome.
What if you could not choose a bird to work with? What if we went outside of the whole bird world and you had to choose another animal completely?
Birds of life. I absolutely love lemurs. I would love to work with lemurs. Lemurs are sick.
Yeah, true. Lemurs are sick. I agree with you. Okay, moving on to question number six, Tess. Do you have any tips for learning how to public speak for keepers that might be lacking a bit of confidence around that area?
Well, you and I both enjoy public speaking, so it's a little bit hard to, you know, have that much empathy, but it definitely is intimidating and daunting any kind of presentation if you haven't done it a lot. So I'm sure you would have felt the same, Daisy, the first time you did a SEAL presentation. And I was the same now with my presentation for the bird show and that kind of thing. I think for me, it's just practice. We all used to squirm in high school when you knew you had a presentation. Or for me personally, I used to absolutely have no confidence when it came to learning to drive. So if you think of something that you don't really like doing, you just get more and more confident the more and more you do it. And every time gets that little bit easier. So if you just force yourself to do it and practice, you'll get more and more comfortable. So I love that with some of my new staff. I could tell that they didn't really want to do the presentation, but they said, hey, can I do the next show as well? I didn't do as well as I had hoped that first show. And I was like, yep, sure. And the next day they're like, do you mind if I do both shows today? I want to get better. So pushing yourself, you can tell they don't want to do it and they're dying inside asking to do two more presentations in the day, but it's the only way you get better. It's the only way you gain confidence. So that's my advice. Would you have anything else, Daisy?
I was just going to say, I could not agree more. I actually reflect a lot. When I was probably maybe 11, I did a musical and I got cast to do one of the songs in the musical. I have no idea why, because I cannot sing. And I was terrified. Like, I practiced once, terrified every single time the practices came around. I would make up some sort of excuse. It came to the night when my grandparents came to watch and they wouldn't let me do it because I hadn't practiced it enough. And I was so upset with myself. And I really think that reflects on me today, because you have to put yourself in uncomfortable positions to get better. And I can guarantee you will feel so much more confident. So exactly what you said, Tess, I have spoken to my driving wheel in the car numerous times almost every day when I'm learning a new script in the car. It is one of the best ways to be able to practice how you want to deliver those messages, practice your scripting, make sure you're comfortable with that scripting, utilize your shower if you like. Anywhere where you feel comfortable and you've got that additional time to practice, it's so beneficial. I also, this sounds maybe a little bit cliche, but I find this helps a lot. I think of moments in public speaking where I feel the most relaxed. For me, it is if I have a snorkel in my mouth or if I'm diving, I feel like everything silences and you're so focused on the moment. You're breathing really calmly. You're in an area that is just beautiful. And so if I ever get moments in my public speaking where I feel a little bit stressed and I'm going too fast, I'm not overly confident with what I'm talking about, I really do. And it honestly works for me a lot. And this is, you know, so subjective to each individual, but it really calms me down and it really reminds me to be really present, because every single opportunity that I have to public speak, present, 99% of the time I'm surrounded by animals. That's pretty darn cool. And I'm talking about something that I'm so passionate about, and I want to not take those opportunities for granted. So I really want to be as present in the moment as I can be. And that absolutely reflects in your presentations. The more passionate you are, the more smiley you are, it's just going to come through without you even having to try. And of course, as well, you have, you know, there's so many cool things that you can read about public speaking. I think we shared maybe last time a great article that Natural Encounters did with Steve Martin all about presenting and different things to think about when scripting. We chatted a little bit about our experience that we had with Michael from Stand and Deliver, who we are, fingers crossed, hoping to get on the podcast as well to share all of his knowledge, which will be so beneficial. But public speaking is so close to my heart, and definitely for you as well, Tess. We have the absolute blessing of being able to do it every day, and that is something that I look at with public speaking. I think it is a blessing. I appreciate it can be terrifying for some people, but everyone progresses and moves past those things in different ways. And for me, like, the bigger the crowd, the better. Like, that's, I get more anxious when there's smaller amount of people there, to be honest. I'm not as comfortable changing around what I'm talking about to suit a smaller crowd. So that's definitely something that I'm working on. So everyone has different challenges, and there's a huge array of different things that you can do to help improve. And I'm always open. Like, if people want to reach out and I can share anything that I've done that's helped, I'd love to chat about that. And I'm sure you're the same, Tess.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's some great tips that you mentioned there. And yeah, we'd love to have Michael on. He sounds awesome.
Yes, fingers crossed.
Now, our next question was, do you see yourself working in this industry forever?
Oh, that's a good question. Hey, I can't imagine myself doing anything else, to be honest. I think, like I said, the blessing of being able to work with animals every day. There's days where you really struggle, I'm not going to lie. And I definitely question it financially. It's not the best career move if you want to make a lot of money. But I would really struggle to see myself doing anything else. The only other thing I would consider myself doing would be presenting at, like, helping people present at different facilities. So still within the industry, just doing maybe a slightly different thing. But yeah, I don't know. What about you?
I love that. I really could see you doing that, like helping people write their scripts and assist with their confidence with public speaking. I really do think I will be in this industry forever, but that doesn't mean that it will be necessarily my role. Like, not next week, the week after, I'm running the junior keeper program for the day because I love kids and I like to just dabble in it. So even if it just means maybe down the track I'm dabbling in education within our facility, or maybe even helping with their social media or that kind of thing. So I absolutely will stay in this industry, but I would like to explore other avenues as well.
Yeah, well, it sounds like you guys are stuck with us forever.
Yeah, TTT and Daisy and Tessa in their 80s, like,
yeah. We're still here. Okay, so obviously with this industry, Tess, question, the next question is, what do you find to be the hardest part of our job?
Well, we do have a question which we're going to talk about later, which, you know, we'll get into a bit more depth, but that is, of course, death. I find losing animals really hard, but we can touch on that shortly. You mentioned it before, and I'm pretty lucky that it's not something that I struggle with anymore, but I definitely worked weekends for like 7 years. So for me, missing out on parties, missing out on friends' birthdays. Everyone does fun stuff on weekends. I really struggled with that when I was younger. Like, I distinctly remember being like 19 and seeing my friends drive the opposite way to the beach on a Saturday, and I was just crying, on the way to work, because I was like, oh, I'm just missing out on the fun stuff in my 20s because I had to work weekends. But, you know, they're also just going to sit on the beach, and I was like flying eagles and having a great old time. So, you know, slings and roundabouts. So I think that's definitely hard. Would you agree? Is that something that you have struggled with?
Oh, 100%. And I think for me, it was a little bit better probably when I first moved here. I moved here at 18. So it was very overwhelming for me to make friends at that age. And a lot of my closest friends have come from working at Australia Zoo. And a lot of us all had the same weekend. So I think we had Tuesday, Wednesday weekends for like 4 years. And it really didn't faze me that much because probably 80% of my friends were within that job. So we all got the same time off together. We still did the same stuff, which was cool. But I think as I've grown older, we've got those amazing friends, but I've been lucky enough to get, you know, have more friends that are not necessarily related to the industry, and they have weekends off, and, you know, I'm married and thinking about families and things like that. The weekends just sucks a little bit. Like, I'm more than happy to work one day in a weekend at the moment, but yeah, I can't imagine having to work across both weekend days. And for me, that would mean never seeing my husband. And yeah, it would be pretty intense. I think when you get a little bit older, your priorities do shift slightly. And it doesn't mean you're any less passionate about what you do, but you definitely look at prioritizing other things. And I think having those weekends off is just so valuable.
For sure. Having that work-life balance is so important. So yeah, I guess in synopsis, the hardest part of the job is keeping that balance. So that's definitely something that we all need to be aware of, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. I've worked pretty hard to try and really focus on that work-life balance, because I think it's pretty easy to get super engulfed in what we do and take it home with us. And I do think I have a really good relationship with work. Sometimes if there's sort of upcoming changes that are happening in the departments or something is still sort of unknown, that can definitely be something that I take home and sits with me a little bit. But honestly, apart from that, I do feel pretty lucky that I've been able to build a pretty good relationship with that work-life balance. And absolutely, so do you, Tess. Like, you seem the exact same, really prioritize your home and personal life too.
Yeah, definitely. And it depends on the role too, I guess, that comes with our kind of job to be able to lock up and switch off. But, you know, if you have more complex things going on or maybe ongoing tasks, that can be a little bit harder, that's for sure.
Definitely.
Now, our next question was tips for having self-confidence in your work.
Oh, this is a toughie. What do you think? Do you have any comments on that one, Tess?
I kind of think it falls back into our imposter syndrome thing. It's just believing in yourself and having that positive self-talk. I think that's just a really important thing to do. We all have moments where we lack confidence and maybe might be a little bit harsh on ourselves. So just really focus on your self-talk. That would probably be a big thing to think about. What about you?
Yeah, I agree. I think that question kind of does fall into a couple of things that we've addressed already. And self-confidence can take work as well. And I think it's really important to remember that it's not necessarily something that you'll gain overnight, and you do have to work towards feeling confident in what you do. And there's absolutely a difference between having that confidence because you're educated in your knowledge or being slightly cocky that comes with confidence as well. I think there can be like a little difference in a little crossing the line sometimes. But I think if there's things that you don't understand, learn about it. Like, that's literally all I did. And I would feel very unconfident in situations. I would learn it and I'm like, okay, well, at least I understand what it means. And now I can practice it. And eventually you become confident, and it can take, some people have an absolute blessing where they're just very confident people and it just shines through in their work. For me, I definitely have to work a little bit harder on that, but I definitely do get there. And I'm grateful for being able to get there eventually, because it shows in my work too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I reflected on recently when I got my role as head of Raptors. This was obviously a long, long time ago. I was managing a team that had all been there longer than me. So my confidence was just lacking. And these people had been working with these birds longer than me. They maybe were in their 40s. I'd had so much experience and I just didn't have the confidence to lead a team or basically have that confidence. And it comes with support as well. So praising each other and talking positively to each other and encouraging each other is all really important. So yes, there's a lot of like having confidence in your own thoughts and self-talk, but it's really important to encourage each other too and make sure that we're keeping that work environment really positive so that everyone has confidence within themselves. And when people make mistakes or if you make your own mistakes, having the confidence within yourself that you will learn from that experience as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that you brought up about people supporting people because that is so important. No one needs to be teared down in this industry. Support is so a part of that self-confidence. And for me, like I'm definitely a person that needs to get like positive feedback to feel like I'm doing well. Every now and then I'm like, okay, give me like a compliment so that I know I'm still doing good. But that massively helps with my confidence a lot. So if you work in a small team or whoever you get to work with, just being aware of, you know, checking in on others and saying a nice comment, providing them with the opportunity to have that self-confidence. I think we can all do that to help people out.
Yeah, absolutely. And often if people are giving that, they're trying to receive it too. Like I give so much praise to my team members. Like, that was great. I was like, that was awesome. Well done. Blah, blah, blah. Like, and it's obviously because, I don't know, once a week when they're like, oh, thanks, Tess, that was good. I'd be like, oh. I like receiving it too. So
if me and you work together, it'd be like, that was great. You'd be like, no, you were great. That was great. You were great. Just keep giving this feedback. absolutely. Okay, well, moving on. Our next question is, what inspires you, Tess?
I think it is having good mentors and positive people. I think people who come to work with a good attitude and a smile on their face and just want to get the work done and work well, that inspires me to also have the same kind of goals. So surrounding yourself by people who basically you want to be or want to be more like, that inspires me. What about you?
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I think that inspiration from other people comes as not jealousy or competition. It comes from inspiration and really wanting to feel, you know, that same sort of feeling that they're getting and that they're giving you as well. And sometimes, honestly, I feel pretty inspired by myself. I look back on things that I never thought in my life I'd achieve and things that I've been able to do. And I'm proud of myself. And I think, what's next? Like, what else can I achieve? Is a lot. And especially like I probably think back to that ASAK conference when they called Jess and I's name maybe like 7 or 8 times a week. And I'm like, we did that. We were able to do this. So that really inspires me as well, the opportunities that we're going to get going forward in the future. But yeah, number one for sure, couldn't agree with you more, is definitely the people around you. Build such a good and positive community around you and it's just going to shine.
Absolutely. I had probably one of the nicest things said to me a couple of weeks ago. I'm passing over my role to a friend of mine in my team for my maternity contract. And she said, Tess, I really want to embody your passion and your basically enthusiasm for the day when you arrive. She's like, when you arrive, you say hi to everyone, you're excited and you basically get like everyone's mood lifted. And she's like, I want to embody that and I want to start the day fresh. And it was kind of nice because I hadn't really reflected on that. Like, I'm a morning person, we all know it. Like I crash after 4. Like, this is a struggle right now.
We know, Jess.
So it was kind of nice to hear that. And yeah, like you said, sometimes you can inspire yourself. So hearing that feedback, I was like, yeah, like, let's embody that. And to have someone be inspired by the way I do that was really nice as well.
100%. 100%.
Okay, going to the heavy now. we touched on it before. How do you manage the death of an animal that you work with?
Oh, this is heavy. And I'm honestly really excited to hear what you've got to say about this because I don't think I manage it very well. I don't think I'm somebody that should be giving advice on how to manage a death of an animal. My brain instantly goes to, I want to fast forward 3 weeks when we're all in a better place about this. But one thing I do sort of reflect on, especially after we got the opportunity to speak to Claire, and if it comes down to a quality of life decision, I loved so much how Claire said that we are so blessed to have the opportunity to utilize euthanasia as an option. And what an amazing thing that we can do for that animal. So if that is the intended sort of route based on a quality of life decision with an animal that has just lived such a fulfilling life, yeah, I think that makes it a little bit easier to deal with. The other situation that I've experienced, not so much. But yeah, what about, I'd love to hear sort of your thoughts on that one, Tess. I think it's something I'm still probably dealing with a little bit.
Well, I definitely struggle. I'm a sensitive Sally like yourself. And I think that we need to give ourselves some credit with that though. So I had a couple individual birds pass away last year and it hit me really hard. Like it was only till maybe a couple of months ago, we have like hand-drawn pictures of them on our wall where I could actually look at the picture without crying. And I would be harsh on myself. I'm like, wow, like, why am I struggling with this so much? But on reflection, say that peregrine, for example, I'd worked with for a decade. I'd been in this role 5 days a week, 8 hours a day. I spent more time with him than I did my husband, my dog, my mom and dad. Like, that's a lot of time. That's a lot of bonding and connection. So to have that animal pass away is a big shock too. And I'm sure everyone has had that. They've had like an animal that they're really close with pass away and it just absolutely floors you. So I think it's important to realize that that is okay. Grief is natural and everyone is affected by it in different ways. So let yourself have a bit of time to grieve. I think that's really important. Basically, another bit of advice that I received years ago, which I absolutely loved, was we put these expectations that our animals will live till their whole expectant life. So say, for example, a peregrine lives to their 20s in human care. And then you look at humans. Some of us live to 50, some of us live to 100. We get cancer, we have bone disease, we have this and that. Not every human lives to their 90s. Different things will affect different animals just as they do humans. So not every animal will live to their full life expectancy in human care. So I think that's really important to reflect on that. Because sometimes we, as much as we wish for that to happen, it's just not feasible and that's just life. So I think that's really important to reflect on too. Yeah, I think that's a big thing for me. Would you agree?
100%. I actually love that. And I'm really glad that you just said feel the feels. Like grief is so okay. And you know, these animals are part of our family. We don't have to explain that to the people listening because I'm sure all of you understand. One thing I think that you could possibly pass on to upper management that might not necessarily be involved in that animal is how the facility deals with it. I've seen a couple of facilities that have posted, you know, we're actually going to be closed tomorrow because we want to give our training team a bit of time to really go through all of these emotions. And I think if you're expected to sort of present or do some sort of interactive with guests, like it's really tough. And I think that could be something that, you know, you can use your voice to communicate with the upper management that, hey, like if unfortunately this happens again, this didn't sit well with the team. This is really tough on the team. Can we look at some sort of kind of protocol, I guess, that if we do lose an animal that we're okay to be able to not have to participate in that presentation. We can postpone that interactive or, you know, we can really prioritize those people's mental health because it can seriously affect people and your staff should be your priority. Because if they're delivering and they're in their best mindset, then you're just going to get happy guests and happy life. So I think that could be possibly something that you could maybe look at doing, depending on how your facility is. You know, I'm sure most facilities are pretty understanding with it because it's awful, but I can definitely see how people who might not necessarily directly work with animals might not fully get the emotions that we unfortunately have to go through.
Yeah, no, I think that's great advice. I feel like to keep that conversation up with management to say how it's affecting the team is really important for sure.
Yeah. And I don't know if you saw Tess, I posted it on our Trainer Talks and Tales story because it absolutely fascinated me that they did another sort of research thing that came out from the animal welfare that we spoke to with Dr. Isabella Clegg. And they did a study that found that generally, if you see cancer in animals in human care, it's actually an indication of really positive welfare, because it's something that they generally don't see in the wild as much, because those animals wouldn't be living that long. It's like humans, mm-hmm. right? You know, back in the day, we never used to pass away from cancer because we just weren't living as long enough to develop those things. So if our animals are developing cancer, it can kind of be linked, which sounds a bit strange, with positive welfare, and that we're providing those animals with really good care. So I think, you know, that's something to reflect on too.
True. Yeah, that's a really good point.
Okay, that was too heavy for me. So let's wrap it up with a fun question. Tess, let's talk about how you start training.
Well, I have had a couple of people not have roles within the sanctuary where they have the ability to train, but they're very interested in it. And I think that's really cool. And sometimes it might just be thinking outside the square. So we are lucky to have lots of chickens at our facility, and our head of barn has said, if anyone would like a chicken, feel free to be assigned a chicken, and you are welcome to have a clicker, have a bit of their DFI or daily food intake, and go for gold. And I think that's really cool, and I really like that, and I hope people at my facility will utilize that. I mean, it's easy to sit down at your lunch break and eat your sandwich, but if you gobble down your lunch break and then go down and train a chicken and just basically learn a bridge, learn a cue, learn the how fast your reinforcement should be, there's nothing better than learning hands-on. So if there's any opportunities to do that, seize them. And maybe if your facility doesn't have that, if there's something you can do, or if there's someone you can ask, if that's something that possibly you do, I would definitely ask to do that.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. And apparently chickens are incredibly intelligent too, so I'm sure you can train a fair bit with them too. And I think, like you said, if you don't possibly have access to that at your facility, maybe it's time to sort of buddy up with someone and say, hey, I really want to progress in my learning. And I've had the pleasure of being able to do it with one of our senior trainers who was teaching a behavior, and I wasn't a part of the behavior at all, but I shadowed every single approximation. And it was great because I got the opportunity, you know, they gave me the opportunity, to ask, what would you do next, without them having to tell me, and then I watch. And that really got my brain thinking a lot. And there's a lot of times I didn't necessarily know the answer, but it was a really good way to learn. And like we kind of were chatting a little bit before about it, most of us listening, I'm going to guarantee, has a dog or a cat at home, and they are like your best little guinea pigs to practice on. And you know those animals better than anyone else. So that's always a great opportunity to sort of do a bit of basic training and just familiarize yourself with the science behind it, and getting those sort of successful approximations and building your confidence with it too.
Absolutely, I agree. We've said this before, it's very easy to forget about our pets at home and how trainable and how willing participants they would be if we spent a bit of time doing some training with them.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Well, Tess, this has been so fun.
Yeah, it's good chat. I loved it.
Yeah, well, hopefully you guys like it too. And yeah, please give us feedback. And if there's any other topics that you want us to chat about in the future, feel free to, you know, message us anytime. You don't necessarily have to wait for us to be looking to record. We prep for these episodes in advance, so we can always look at adding in different topics that you want to hear about. We are constantly working towards getting new guests and covering new topics for all of you guys, and different species as well. So lots is on the horizon, which is exciting. Hey.
Yes, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining us. And we have another great episode for you next week. So enjoy the rest of your week. Thanks, guys.
Bye.